This is the CC Radio Podcast.
Welcome to episode 207 of the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews Podcast. Today we're going to pleasantly tighten your buttholes, peeps, in a good way, trust us. My name is Wayne.
Sure. My name is Paul. Welcome to the podcast. We count down movies, sometimes television, in order of awesomeness, so you don't have to. And as Wayne says, we're going intense on you.
That's right.
Real intense. So intense, I haven't worked out a joke for it yet.
So intense, if you put coal in your asses, something about a diamond. All right.
So intense that I won't use the past tense. No, moving right along.
All right, well, that's fine.
That was lame.
They don't all work, people. They don't all work.
Or any of them. One of the two. So it is the top 10 intense films.
Most intense films.
That's it. So the best intense films. Films that, as you kind of colloquially described, don't let up.
Exactly.
So in my mind, it's films which, right from the get-go, grabbed you by the short and curlies and never let go.
Exactly. And it's a little different to tense moments in a film.
No, it's a whole
film. This is the whole film, so it's a little bit tough. Different one, really.
Yeah, my list is basically which films were the tensest throughout, as opposed to the best film that had some tense moments.
I think I might have gone the other way, except for it was... No. In terms of, like, it might have been a tense film all the way throughout,
yeah.
But I still had to like it.
You know, yeah, so. Of course.
Okay.
Right. They're the best intense films, not the most intense films at that.
Damn it, it's a tough one.
It's not unusual for us on this show to come at from slightly different angles.
Yeah, we don't think the same.
We'll see how it all maps out. But before we get there, let's do our plug, Wayne, for the Podcast Republic app.
A good-ass Robusto app. That is for your Android device.
Device. Yes. So if you are an Android user and you're looking for an app to listen to this show or indeed any other show, check out the Podcast Republic app.
My cousin Ash recently changed from iPhone to Android.
What is he doing?
I gave him some shit about it and he's like, fuck you, man. And then we're like, what up, man?
I stand resolute, yeah. Motherfucker.
That's right. And I said, Android, but you're not a poor cunt. And he was like, fuck you. At least I don't buy the same fucking phone every year. And I'm like, what? And it went on and on. And it's quite funny, though.
Did he get the Podcast Republic app?
Yeah, that's he did. That's the first thing he got.
Thank you very much. I'm glad that we finished that with something relevant. Idiot. All right. Now, we still haven't got a little opener for this yet, but we need to get to the results from last week's poll from episode 206, as well as a couple other bits and pieces based on last week's episode that people were good enough to point out to us. Starting with Julio, patron to the show, good friend from the Contrarians podcast.
Julio.
He did point out, last week I was questioning whether or not in the book, Kathy Bates' character cuts off
James Caan's character's
feet, or whether I was misremembering that. I concluded I was misremembering that. No, apparently she totally chops his feet off in the book. Maybe only one foot, but it's definitely worse than in the movie. Thank you for that, Julio.
God damn.
Then Jason from the Binge Movies podcast. If you haven't checked them out yet, they have returned after a couple of years hiatus.
A couple of years, wow.
Great show. Really enjoy that. Jason and I may even have a little side thing that we might be putting together once in a while.
Very cool.
In short order. Now, I'm sure your legion have pointed this out, but referring to when you were talking about the Bat credit card.
Yeah.
He said, the credit card never expires because it says forever.
Does it really?
Get it?
Oh my God.
I did not know that. I thought you might have.
I thought I might have too. You know what? This is odd, but that makes it slightly better. Not a lot and not enough, but slightly better.
Now I do need to bring up the results. And boy, oh boy. Boy, oh boy, oh boy. It was 3-2 I was leading. Well, now it's 3-3. And this is probably one of the most comprehensive spanking in the show's history. You, with your list of top 10 what the fuck moments, which was last week's show, 44 votes.
Wow.
I did make it to double figures just with 12. That is as comprehensive a beating as you can possibly take on this show. So well done, sir.
As I've often said, there are no losers here, Paul, because they listened.
That's true. Now, why did people vote for you so wholeheartedly? Well, Sean Ennis says, I like Paul's movies better, but Wayne's list gave me nightmares.
Yeah, it's...
So I guess he wins?
You know what it was? I suffered for them and they appreciated it.
Yep. ATN said, I'm going for Wayne because I can't admire how what the fuck he went.
Yeah. It was nasty. I was even thinking it over too. I'm like, should I? Fuck it.
Chris Yeeney said, I was even saying what the fuck for some of the films that Wayne actually watched. Pink Flamingo, Piano Teacher.
Actually, Piano Teacher you can get by. Pink Flamingo, do not go for you. It's just not worth it.
And then Brianna Petty had summarized most of the love. Duck titties. End of story. If you don't know what we're referring to, then, well, Billy from the We Watch the Thing podcast wanted to weigh in a little bit too. Great show. Do check them out. He said, I'm going through some old episodes of your show, and what are the odds that Howard the Duck would come up again in Best Buddy Couples for the same reason it's in your most what the fuck moments?
Is that so?
Now he said, I'd like to challenge you to work Howard the Duck into as many lists as possible. So I said, wait, sold. You're obviously not talking about me. This must have been a Wayne thing. He said, yes, classic Wayne, misinterpreted as odd couples, which to him meant freaky sex couples.
Do you know what? I'm racking my brains to try and think of how I mentioned it before. But I'll be honest with you, folks. Second this episode is over, I forget about it like a fucking goldfish. I can't remember what I said. And so, you know, I'm into it though. But to be fair, I don't remember a lot of things about my life.
Then John D said, want to see Wayne's head explode? A Tango and Cash sequel set in the present. And they're married.
I love it.
There was lots of hashtag ditties.
Diddies.
So yeah, that was your number one.
I love when duck titties resonate with the people.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, you did very, very well. Well done. Three all, and we move into this week's show.
Oh my God, have I ever been in the lead before?
Yeah, last year you were spanking me early.
And then it went over. So this is that, Paul. This is that.
Yeah, it's three all. We'll see how this winds up today. I have noticed a bit of a trend, which basically is that listeners tend to vote for whoever is out of their wheelhouse the most.
Oh, interesting.
I think. So, like, they appreciate the effort that you went to with watching a film about someone eating shit.
Oh, God, I still fucking have problems with it.
Like, the horror ones, you always seem to win because everyone feels sorry for you.
Oh, yeah, no, that I do.
Romantic comedy, I tend to do very well because people feel sorry for me.
That's a good point.
But I do have one last thing before we get into the countdown proper today.
Go on.
A little birdie, appropriately enough, tells me that perhaps buoyed by your focus on ducks and their titties, last week... You took a duck in for the night.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. I forgot about this.
Ducks on the brain, clearly.
No, this was weird. I was driving home, and right near the bins, it was bin night. As I go into the driveway, I see there's something moving next to the bin, and I look closely, and it's like this bird that's obviously been hit by a car or something. I'm like, shit. So I park the car. I come out. It's a duck. I'm like, fuck. Now what? Had to take the duck.
Well, you were
inside.
Like, titties?
No, I did not. I don't even want to see real duck titties, man. So, long story short, we took it in. I had to kind of keep it overnight and then took it into the vet. And unfortunately, although it made it through the night,
yeah,
I don't believe it went there. So.
I did. It didn't survive. I'm sorry that the duck didn't survive.
No,
I thought it was very, very odd
that
the day after you spent so long talking about ducks.
Yeah, you're right.
You have a duck spend the night.
Man! That's a weird thing that no one's ever even said before. So, there you go. Since never been offered.
There we go. That's the kind of entertainment we offer here on the countdown.
We're playing it fast and loose today, folks, in case you haven't noticed.
All right, without any further ado then, let's get in. Oh, no, one more thing. The movie watching challenge between Daniel from the IMDb Journey podcast and I continues. We are halfway through March. Daniel, according to the Letterboxd scorecard, is four films ahead of me, 113 films of the year versus my 109.
Holy shit.
I, however, do have a few in the up my sleeve. I haven't got a chance round to entering in yet. So it's very, very close.
Paul Stone points, everyone.
Very, very close. That's all I'll say. Maybe Daniel's got the same thing going.
So. I know.
But no one, there's no clear winner yet. Of course, some of our listeners have taken it ridiculously beyond
I love that.
The Mortal Kombat. I've seen over 150 films.
Holy
running
shit.
Away with it. Running away with it. So there will be a prize in the year. We'll talk about that more the closer we get. I think it's a two-horse race now anyway. So.
Really? Wow. Okay.
All right, that is it for the lead-in, if you want to call it that, for this week's show. On the other side of this music cue, let's do it. The top 10 most intense films. Tense films that are so tense, they're intense.
Well done.
Is the subject of this week's countdown. Should have rolled with that in the early parts of the show.
We should have.
It's pretty straightforward. Films that are extremely suspenseful, have you on the edge of your seat. Films that don't let up, as you
don't let up.
Described it. There's no need to discuss the criteria beyond that, except for apparently you may have slightly come at it differently. Let's see how differently. Lead us away, Wayne.
No problem. My number 10 film is a film that Paul, in fact, took me to back in the dizzy. And it was a indie film, and I found myself quite surprised at how engrossed I was in it. The movie is called Cube.
Oh, yeah, okay, yes. Nice. Just dropped on Netflix, by the way.
Did it?
Yeah. So if you're that's cool. In Australia, at least anyway. So if you are Australian and want to check out the show after Wayne talks about it.
Well, perhaps you will like it. See, okay, first of all, it is indie, so it is low budge. Don't be worrying about that shit because I think it's still worth a look. It's about this bunch of people who, without remembering how they got there, they all awaken in this prison of cubic cells, and some of them are booby-trapped, and there's like this cop character and a scientist and a young math genius, a very odd sort of hodgepodge of people. And they have to basically figure out what the deal is with these cubes and how they're going to move out of this facility, which seems to have interchanging different rooms that are all cubes that all have different shit that can kill them.
Yeah. Well, every exit from a room, at least one exit is booby-trapped.
That's
and
right.
And every exit has six, so you can go up, you can go down through the floor, you can go out through one of the four walls.
That's right.
And it plays out from there.
It's very clever because it's essentially one set that they lit all different times so they could have these supposed multiple rooms. But it did actually, I remember when I was watching it, I was actually clenching the seat a bit and I didn't let it go, like my arm got sore. So obviously it hooked me for long enough.
I was trying to talk fiance into seeing this the other night.
Really?
She's resistant, but now you've talked it up, she might give it a bash.
All right, Patsy, here's the thing. Don't expect too much. Just pretend like it's a friend's film project, and then you'll like it. That's what I'm saying.
It's better than Reap.
Is it a friend, not us? So
hang on. What? No.
Well done.
How is it possible? No, it's true. It really is better than Reap.
Yes, look, this small fun fact about this film, the director, his name is Vincenzo Natali. He was the storyboard artist for Keanu Reeves' Johnny Mnemonic movie.
He went on to way bigger things than that. He's directed Splice. He directed a whole bunch of other films.
There's no way I will have seen Splice.
That's got Adrian Brody and...
Oh.
Can't remember.
Is it a horror movie?
Yeah, sci-fi thriller with some horror elements. He's done a few other films as well. You will have seen some of his filmography.
Digging. So, Cube.
All right. Apparently very nice. That's a good way to kick it off. Number 10. My number 10 is not dissimilar in the fact that it's intense. It's a bigger budget film.
Okay.
It's one that you might have expected to be higher on my list, but I'm going to explain my rationale for it. It is Alfonso Cuarón's
Oh my God.
Children of Men.
Oh my God. Low.
I was waiting. I was expecting something more.
I thought this was a one for you.
It's number 10 because it is intense and there are some incredibly intense moments. If we're talking top 10 tension-filled scenes,
I see what you mean. There's space between them.
But there's lots of space between them. The film breathes. Mm. It allows you to catch your breath. It isn't quite as intense the whole way. And even, yes, it starts off with a bombing and takes you by surprise.
Yeah.
What the fuck, really? Then it kind of spends 20, 30 minutes setting up the world. So it's not this full balls to the wall intense hallway.
You're right.
The second half is intense the whole way.
That's what I... Because I actually went back and sort of just skipped through it a bit, right? I was just watching scenes from it. And when you don't... When you take out the, so we say, boring or, you know, the 11 bits, right? And you're just watching long take after long take after long take, right? I remember just sitting there going... Because even when I saw it, the second half of the movie is when it took off. And do you think to yourself, well... If it starts in the second half, I guess you're right. It isn't the most tense movie. It just has the most tense moments.
Yeah.
So, but that bit where he's jump-starting the car, or like he's rolling the car down the hill, I remember just fucking yelling at the screen, going, come on! You know, like, you fucking turned it over so quick, you silly bitch!
Which is a pretty good sign that the film's fairly intense.
Oh, and that. And then him jumping between the buildings and stuff and getting capped, and then getting set upon by Chippetail, whatever the guy.
Edgeful.
Yeah.
That's a name I can say.
Edgeful, there you go, well done. Those things were all just the bomb, and I think, to me, it became a tense movie as a result. I remember it as a tense movie, when in fact it was half a tense movie.
Yeah. All right, that's my 10.
All right.
Not on your list. Oh, no, it's low. It's coming up.
It's up high, okay. So yeah. My number nine
yep.
is, get this, I know I might get some heat for it, I don't give a fuck, Speed. What? Speed. That's right.
What the hell?
Ah, suck my dick, motherfucker. No! This is a terrific-ass popcorn thriller. It's taut, it's tense, and it's energetic.
I can go one better than that.
You can suck my dick with your bullshit. Fuck you, asshole! What's with this bullshit? Two Will Smiths in a row, suck a dick.
That was actually Keanu Reeves.
How about suck my dick? What?
Fuck off. Yes, it was. Would you like to hear it again?
No, fuck off!
Whoa, hold on.
Ah, fuck. I'm so sorry our listeners have to put up with your shit.
Yes, my shit.
Fuck you!
Screeching in rage.
At least that shit's organic. everyone, speed. All right. This is literally a not let up movie, okay? Keanu Reeves at the beginning of the movie goes to get a damn coffee, gets a muffin, and then some shit blows up. Then he gets a Dennis Hopper call, and that's it. No letting up from there. Ass is on a bus. Bus can't go past 55. Then they end up in some other bullshit.
Past, I mean under.
Sorry, under 55. Yeah.
Is it really 55 miles an hour the whole way?
Yes.
That's like 70 kilometers.
That's quite
low. No, to 1.6 miles. 85 km.
That's fast for a bus.
Yeah.
Shit. Do the oh, wow, yeah, that's a lot.
Pretty sure the music from it now can feature. Is this the one that goes?
That's the one. Yeah. Wait, in my head it is. I don't know if it is.
I'll find out.
Okay, fine. But yes, I don't know. Did you all? I mean, it's fun to make fun of Speed now and all the fucking Annie this and whatever, you know. And it's Keanu Reeves and you think it's popcorn. It definitely is popcorn, by the way. Doesn't mean it's not intense as all fuck. Yeah. All right. Well, I was...
No, it fits the brief. It does.
I think so. Yeah. But I actually think as well, even with the train thing that goes through the bottom at the end, that's where the movie ended. And it was not... They didn't let up all the way through. Even from when, like, the house gets blown up with what's his name in it. And then,
yeah, Jeff Daniels.
Yeah, all this shit. Man, cool as fuck. And it never stops moving. This is the bomb. Great idea.
Hmm. So I'm expecting Speed 2 Cruise Control higher on your list?
Look, you can't go put the damn boat on there and say, now it's on the water. Okay.
Pop know. Quiz, hot shot.
Pop quiz, exactly.
Okay.
Although Jason Patrick didn't mind him.
you are a weird defender of that film. Hence my question. All right, my number eight is a film which I have to credit. It was on my radar a little, but then... No, I'm lying. The listeners reminded me of it, so I put it in here late. It's Alejandro González Iñárritu's... Iñárritu's The Revenant.
Yeah.
This film was intense as fuck.
I saw someone's... who was it?
David Powell, maybe.
Yeah, yep. I think I saw his picture. I was like, ooh, that's a good call. But yep. I already made the list. I'm like, yeah. But it's definitely... You're right.
Because the first part of the film, the way I love this movie. I am an ardent lover. It's a brilliant 4K disc. That's right, 4K. For all those playing at home on the Countdown Bingo. Thank you, Taramaholic.
Rich cunt. So go on.
It's one of the best looking discs that I've got. It is stunningly put together. But I remember the first bit of the film, the whole time I was waiting for this vaunted attack. They get attacked by Native Americans.
That is...
And then that happens. It's like, oh my God. And then there's a little bit of a downer. A little downer. Intention stakes while they're moving, trying to get away.
That was the thing that I...
But it doesn't run for very long.
No, I don't think it would.
And then he gets separated, attacked by the bear.
Yeah, oh, that bear. That bear
thing
hell.
Is hugely intense. And then the whole thing is... Is he? Well, we know he's not going to. But is he going to succumb to his injuries? And how is he going to survive this? And this is bullshit. He's going to climb into a fucking horse, and he falls off the edge of this, and then he rescues some kidnapped person. And then the whole time he's like, once what happens, he's chasing Tom Hardy's character, and he's trying to get revenge. So once he's actually got past his injuries, now it's like, will he get him? Because this Tom Hardy guy, he is a proper prick.
Oh, he's a cunt.
Yeah.
But like, does he? How long is the movie again?
It's about 2.5 hours.
Two and a half hours, and it's intense all the way through, except for a little. Yeah. Which, by the way, they do need actual like plot in there, so that's fair enough.
Yeah. There's a couple bits of flashes back to the fort, and we see Domhnall Gleeson's character and the like questioning the surviving men, and
I see.
Generally speaking, this film doesn't let up.
I mean, you've seen it way more recently than me, and in fact, I've only seen it once, so I probably would give it another go. But sure. Yeah, fantastic. That's not bad. Thank Definitely you. Real. All right. My number eight is a Denis Villeneuve movie called Prisoners.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. It did blink on my radar. That's the word I'm looking for. Sorry.
I think why... Because it's hard for me to... I don't know. The movie is about Hugh Jackman. His six-year-old daughter is missing... together with her young friend, and the only lead they have is this, dilapidated
Kill
RV.
Every motherfucker.
Yeah, exactly. And so, basically, it comes to light that Paul Dano is caught by Jake Gyllenhaal. I'm just using the actors' names here.
Yeah.
As you do.
you do.
And it looks, I do. It looks very much like Paul Dano is actually the guy who took them, but they can't hold him because of a lack of evidence. So Hugh Jackman kidnaps his ass, holds him up in an abandoned house, and fucking tortures him. And so that is the whole movie. But I think this is actually one of my favorite examples of an intense film. I didn't see it till very late because people told me about it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it shows you, like, first of all, it throws you in because you are basically, as an audience member, kind of told by the movie, yeah, he actually did it. And then, you know, it goes on from there. I won't spoil it for anyone. But the torture scenes pretty much are
Hugh Jackman. You're not told by the movie. You're led to believe.
You're led to believe. You're right. And Hugh Jackman does stuff like by scolding him in the shower. And beating the piss out of him and just stuff like that. And you're kind of, the whole time, you're like, shit, is this okay or isn't it okay?
I'll tell you, as a father of an almost 6-year-old, totally okay.
Totally okay, right? Exactly. But, no, look, I do think that. I think to myself, well, of course you would. How do you not do that if there's a chance you can save your kid, you know?
Yeah.
So fuck that guy. But that's why it gets you in, peeps. Mm. If you ain't seen Prisoners, I would totally give it a try.
It's well worth a recommend.
Great ending, too.
Mm. Mm. May feature on a future episode, actually.
Interesting.
Yeah, I won't say what it is.
Okay, it's okay, just... cool.
All right, that's your number 8, 7. My number 7 is probably the best example of an action film in... No, second best example of an action film in my list. It is a film from director Gareth Evans. We do sing its praises a lot on this mm-hmm. one. Especially I do. It's The Raid.
This is an honorable mention for me,
yeah,
but it's I totally could have been on my list because you're right. Once it's violent, it doesn't stop being violent.
This is 92 minutes, something like... No, it's 101 minutes. First 10 minutes, set up. After that, does not let mm-hmm. up. It is balls-to-the-wall action the whole way through. If you haven't seen the film, you haven't heard us talk about it before, it's a small group of basically SWAT or commandos mm-hmm. Infiltrating a drug lord's sort of
high-rise
15-story high-rise, which he has populated with a whole bunch of ne'er-do-wells on the lower levels. Mm-hmm. And basically, he says, once he becomes aware that they're in the building, every person who kills one of these guys will get a huge amount of drugs or a reward of money.
Yeah.
And so the entire building is trying to kill these police officers as they ascend up to the top to get this drug lord.
And
it's fucking awesome.
It's fantastic. And then when you start getting into hand-to-hand combat, I mean, it's very fortunate that one of the cops happens to be the best martial artist on the planet. But that's the whole movie, man. It's so cool.
Yep.
And beating up someone by smacking their head against the wall with your knee multiple times all the way down. Who even thought of that?
Incredibly inventive shots
when,
in this film.
When I saw that in the trailer, I was like, it reminds me of the time I saw Bullet Time in the Matrix trailer. Yeah. I was like, what happened? What the fuck? It was like that, even though it was nothing near
the
same
thing.
This
is a film I can watch again and again.
Oh, yeah.
It's so rewatchable as well, despite that intensity, unlike something like Hey Hunter or Mumbai, which
I'll never watch that again.
In the upcoming feature review. This one it's so rewatchable because despite the intensity, it's still, there's a fun element to it. There's a enjoyable element to it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that's why it's fun. And also, by the way, Hotel Mumbai was going to make this list. And I thought, you know, it's too recent.
Honorable mention for me.
Yeah, it's an honorable mention for me now as well, exactly. Okay, thank you. That was your number 7.
Yep, over to you for 6. I said that was 7. That's actually my 8. My apologies. I screwed that up. So open to you for your 7.
My 7 is Everyone Knows I Love Sicario.
Ah, funny that then, because my number 7 is Sicario.
Oh, good. I thought I was going to give you shit about it, okay?
No, not at all.
Oh, my God.
I think you like it more than I do, but as an example of an intense film.
I think we're all talking about the when they come into Mexico over that bridge.
That's the best scene. They're coming out of Mexico.
Out of Mexico,
from memory. But it starts off with a pretty intense scene, so it throws you right in.
Oh, dude, when they're casing the joint and then the fucking kaboom. My God, what a great-ass movie that is. And the reason I kind of started watching Arrival. I think I enjoyed Arrival because I was remembering how much he made me enjoy Sicario almost. And I did.
Well, that's the only way you would expect to.
I love Arrival. I think it's a great fucking
different
movie.
Discussion.
Yeah, Paul and I used to always fight about this. But just on that scene with the fucking them going, you know, in the SUVs and whatever. Mm-hmm. What was cool about that was as it was ramping up, this dog is barking and it really agitates you it puts you right on the edge. And I think to myself, whoever the sound engineer is, he absolutely knows what he's doing. He's made it just too loud to annoy you and make you pissed off, and then when shit goes down, you're right in there. Fantastic. Good ass movie.
Yeah, I agree. It is a very tense film. I don't think I liked it as much as you liked it as much as a lot of people did, but it's a very, very good film. And even so, the way it sort of ramps up towards the end when Benicio del Toro's character is being escorted into Mexico and what's going on here. Your point of view is the Emily Blunt character's point of view, and she's sort of new to this whole world and she doesn't really understand what they're really doing, and she finally works out what he is, a hitman.
Yeah.
And the government is repurposing him for its own devices. And yeah.
A lot of people had this problem with the movie, but for me, it was the best thing about it, right? So Emily Blunt's story essentially ends before the end of the third act, right? Like, when
most stories end before on the third act.
No, I'm saying it like 20 minutes into the third act.
Yeah.
Because then the last 20 minutes is just Benicio, who turns out to be the Sicario.
Yes.
Going into the drug lord's house. And then, like, you almost don't see her again until the very end, right? So people were like, well, they were expecting she was the hero. No, it's cool that Benicio came up and became the thing that the movie's kind of about.
Yeah, there's that scene. There's also a scene which deserves props. So I would say the reason this is 7 on my list and not higher is because, it's probably 5 really tense scenes interspersed with down points.
Yes.
Rather than other films. And arguably, The Raid should be higher now that I think about it. And was until I screwed up my list. But anyway.
But I don't...
Because The Raid is intense the whole way. There's almost no time to catch
Although I would say five intense scenes in a movie is pretty much the whole movie. Yeah. Except for like...
There's lots of talking about what we're going to do and how we're going to do it and bringing her up to speed. But then there's that scene where John Bernthal attacks her.
That was intense though.
I'm saying that is another example of those intense scenes.
Okay. Fair enough.
Okay, so that was both of our sevens. Yep. Back to you for your six.
Okay. My number six is definitely one of my favorite movies. David Fincher directed it, and it is, of course, The Game with Michael Douglas and Sean Penn.
I kind of forgot about this one.
This is a movie about a wealthy investment banker, Michael Douglas, who's given this mysterious gift where he has to participate. Well, Sean Penn gave it to him, where he has to participate in a game that integrates in strange ways with his everyday life, presumably created by a particular company that does this sort of stuff. And it's very weird. It sounds really weird, but...
No, it's great. It's great. I'm laughing just because of the idea that this company could exist and make money off
this.
Oh,
God.
But anyway.
Well, unless they literally charged $8 million for every time that they charge, they could probably do it quite easily then. But because you never know what's real and you don't know who's an actor and you don't know who's in or whatever or out, you are engrossed. I think I spent this entire movie leaning forward in my seat. Well, I wasn't clenching necessarily. Yeah, so it wasn't anxiety type intensity. It was more intrigue type intensity.
We could have called this episode Top 10 White Knuckle Films or something.
Yeah, we probably could have done that. But this, to me as well, it was very intense though, because it actually, I don't know. It draws you in, but more than that, the people who are in danger in this movie you tend to care about because you're not sure if they're innocent or, I don't know. It's very interesting. But
Long time since I've seen it. It's probably worth a rewatch.
I'll definitely look again.
My number six then is the most recent film. Oh, geez, actually. Maybe it's not the most recent film. It's very close to another one that's on my list from last year.
Okay.
And I dragged you to see it. We saw it at an event screening. We had to sit in the front fucking row. And first of all, I think the very first scene in the film virtually has a scare in it, which had you going, fuck this shit.
Yeah.
Which was the cue to the gentleman to my right, who was not known to us, for the rest of the film, every time something scary or intense happened, which is a lot, go, fuck this shit, fucking hell, fuck no, the whole fucking way through the film.
Isn't it weird how people take a cue from that?
Yeah.
It's like, dude.
It's like, you gave him permission, now he was going to talk it up.
I know, dude, you're not going to be this funny. I felt like saying that.
I am talking about Hereditary, directed by Ari Aster.
Intense. You're probably right.
Oh, fuck, it was intense.
Yeah, it was. I'm trying to think about how consistently intense it was, but you know what it was?
Pretty fucking intense.
It was, because it was overall this feeling of dread, which kind of brought you down and kept you expecting.
This foreboding, this dread. Oh, so, big time. You know, the film starts with, the mother, Toni Collette's mother, again, I'll use the actor's name this time, dying. And then, I was expecting, because we knew very little about this film, the marketing was very good about drawing you in but not giving away what was happening.
Big time.
And so there's this sort of ghostly phenomenon looking around the back. What's going on here? There is that, like, the scare that made you go, like, what the fuck?
No, that was just more, because it didn't even give you the answer to the scare. It was just like, that looks fucked up and I don't know what it is and I was pissed off. So.
And then we get a huge development. There's probably a little bit of downtime there for the next 10, 15 minutes. Then we get a huge development in the film, which sets the film on a whole other, and I'm being very careful here because it's new.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just on Netflix as well, so... Get into it, see this film if you're at all interested.
We sort of talked about it last week, so we kind of did there.
We did. What the fuck moment. Right?
Yeah,
we did too. That moment. And then it sort of escalates up to this whole other level of
when it actually
intensity.
Gets to where it's going. Yeah. I remember going, this is almost so harsh for me to watch that I don't know if it's stupid looking or not. I don't know. But it was, look, you should
definitely. I bought it. I loved it.
No, you. It's one of the better ones, but a lot of people.
It was on my top 10 last year, so Hereditary is my number six.
Okay. My number five, I've been waiting to talk to you about, people. This is a little known movie, and it's one of those ones that I'm like, this is absolutely a gem, and it didn't do anything at the box office, and it is not well known. It's called Running Scared. Now, do you remember this movie? So it's Paul Walker, Chaz Palminteri, and Vera Farmiga. All right? Now...
Okay. All right.
Okay, we'll check it out, right? This is...
I'm surprised. Is this high?
Dude, okay. I remember seeing this, not expecting anything, and then being kind of... I'll say it. Blown away. All right? This is, by the way, Paul Walker's best film by a mile, in my opinion. Okay?
Oh, yeah.
And it shows that he's a real actor, and the directing and the story...
With apologies to all the Fast and Furious fans out there.
I don't think any of them think that. Into the Blue is better than that podcast. Anyway.
Oh, no. Come on.
What? No.
Maybe. Anyway, this movie, Paul Walker is this low-level mechanic in the mafia who hopes to rise through the ranks by doing whatever he needs to do. And one night, this drug deal goes really wrong where these police show up. They try and close down the operation. And then, shit goes down and these cops get killed very violently by gunshot.
They give Paul Walker the gun that killed the policeman and tell him to make it disappear so it can't be used as evidence. But before he does that, the gun gets stolen by one of his kid's friends. And what ultimately goes through is that basically him and his wife go through every almost different type of criminal in the underworld. And really quite surprisingly harsh shit happens. And it's just an extremely well-made, well-shot, well-put-together movie. And you should totally check it out. I think, to me, I never stopped. I think because I was expecting nothing. Mm. I was like, holy shit. And I just kept on going up and up and up.
This is from the guy that directed The Cooler. From
there. Yes. And that's...
I can't remember his name off the top of my
head.
That's
the only reason I... His name is... Yeah, I didn't write it down.
Brilliant.
But like, the Cooler is the reason I saw this movie. Because that was it. And then Paul Walker at the time, like, we still thought he was just, you know,
Keanu Reeves.
Fast and Furious. Exactly, right? But no, this is like the, speaking of Keanu Reeves, in Street Kings.
Mm. Which I watched the other night.
Street Kings.
Rewatched this again on Netflix.
Man, I was on a date when I was fighting with the girl and we went to watch Street Kings because that's what we were doing. The movie was so good, it made our night better. Like, at the end, I was like, that was really good. Yeah, it was really good. And then, like, we became a better night. We went out for dinner. It was awesome.
It wasn't that good. It was fine. It's a good film.
Totally.
It's not just but that's where make I your date better.
It was for me. And I'm telling you, that's where I found out Keanu could act. So it's all about the director, people.
Yeah. Keanu can act. Keanu has a certain type of role.
Before that, it was all fucking Bram Stoker's Dracula and, like, get your hands off me.
How dare you, Bill and Ted?
Fucking hell. Yeah. Yeah.
How dare you?
No. Whatever. Anyway.
Are you saying you don't like Keanu?
Oh, I love Keanu.
Good, because otherwise I'm getting John Wick or some words to you, motherfucker.
He'll fuck a brother up, no doubt.
Right.
No doubt.
All right, well, is that it? You're done with your number five?
I am.
All right, well, it's a strange one out of left field. My number five, not out of left field, and everyone will have expected it on my list at some point. It is one of the greatest chase films of all time.
What? Okay.
It is also...
The Italian Job. Oh, yeah.
Cocaine is a hell of a drug.
That's all
I need to do. Respond to that. No, it is Mad Max Fury
Road.
Oh,
God, of course, it's on you.
Couldn't leave it off the list. I'm sorry. I did leave a couple off the list that I talk about all the time, so we'll get to those in honorable mentions.
To be fair, it is a road movie that goes one way then the other way, so it really hasn't got time to sit to do anything. It's a chase film.
Very first scene, he gets chased, he gets caught, he escapes. He tries to escape. They capture him longer. They chase someone else. He becomes part of that chase, gets on the other end of the chase, more chasing, turn around, come back, chase, have to go back through the chases.
Guitar dipping people on sticks, yep. Yes.
Action extraordinaire. It's so tense. It's so full on.
Actually, it doesn't let up. You're right. It doesn't let up. Not bad. So,
had to be on my list, and I'm always happy to talk about Mad Max Fury Road.
No shit. If How many times have you seen it?
Just because I can then include the music, which is one of my favorite pieces of music ever made for film.
God.
On the episode.
Paul throwing his weight around as an editor. How many times have you seen it?
Six, seven
times. That's pretty good. All right, nice. Is this part of your movie watching shit? Does that go on the list?
Yeah, you're allowed to rewatch.
Oh, of course, yeah, okay. Fair enough.
I will no doubt. I haven't watched it this year yet, so it's due. Let's put it that way.
All right. Well, my number four is Children of Flaps. So we can just bounce right on. That sounds bad, doesn't it?
Never use the word children and flaps in the same sentence ever again.
That's just a thing I do, folks. I use the word flaps like people, like the Smurfs used to use the word Smurf. Just every noun, every adjective.
Verb. Does that mean there was Flaphead in your world?
Flaphead? No, but there was Papa Flap. Oh, Jesus. Okay.
Now we know how Wayne refers to himself and his significant other whenever he has one.
Ah, shit.
All right, so that was your four. Yep. My four is a film you've never seen, you will never see, and I don't expect you to ever see because I value your sanity.
What?
Small that it is. It is a French film which I would suggest...
Just sniffing tissue film?
It's almost at that level.
Oh, wow.
It's from Pascal Lahure. Mm-hmm. It's Martyrs from 2008.
Oh.
I have spoken about it before.
Tell me again how this is.
This is a film basically which opens with what looks like a 12, 13-year-old girl running away in absolute fear from this abandoned facility. And then we flash forward 20 years, give or take, and two women. Well, first of all, we get 10 minutes of sort of downtime establishing a normal family.
Mm-hmm.
Dad, mom, the kids, kids who are teenagers and the like. And then these two women break into the house and proceed to start to kill them mercilessly.
Women?
Yeah. And
with what?
The like film, yeah, guns okay. and the like. And,
fuck.
Yeah. And fuck like, so they look like they're the aggressors and whatever. But then the film sort of slowly shows you that one of the women is that girl who's running at the start. And she is a survivor of severe physical and sexual abuse. And the dad was a perpetrator of that.
Oh.
So she claims. Yeah. And her friend's kind of helping her but trying to stop her. And the film from there goes places that are is almost... First of all, I would never describe because it ruined the film. There's no point in watching it.
Fair enough.
But almost impossible to describe.
Really?
It's so horribly intense and awful. It's mind-bogglingly
I'm just grimacing listening to you watch it. Like, so talk about it, I mean.
Yeah, so if you've seen this film, you'll understand what's on the list. If you haven't seen this film, you probably have avoided it for good reason. But if you are that small percentage of people who are like, every film this list I want to watch, I'm into intense films and you haven't seen this, absolutely seek it out. And then either yell at me or thank me later.
Do you rate the film?
Yeah. It's incredibly effective. It leaves you feeling icky and horrible and drained.
Wow. Mm. See, I immediately I'm like, am I up for that? No, but maybe I should to be a well-rounded critic.
Don't
no?
do it.
Don't do it?
No.
Paul straight up saying don't
do
it.
You get a pass on this film.
Really? No need. Fine. Fuck it. I'm not doing it then. But if you guys are tougher than me, and you should be, then go right ahead. Okay. My number three is Phone Booth, son.
Oh, okay.
Remember Phone Booth?
I do remember Phone Booth.
Colin Dan Farrell just walking his ass down New York City, like Times Square kind of styles. And then he picks up a phone from a booth that is ringing. And it turns out on the other end is Kiefer Sutherland, who is a damn sniper, who has a gun trained on him. And he makes him do all kinds of shit. Now, Joel Schumacher joint.
It is.
Shot for a shoestring budget of I don't know because I didn't write that down either. But
definitely a shoestring.
Yeah.
Take it from Wayne. He knows his shoestrings.
I know shoestring thickness things. Because it just follows him the whole time and you don't actually see Kiefer Sutherland until for just like blurred seconds towards the end. I don't know. I also sat forward in my seat on this one and I think it didn't actually let up because he never leaves the damn box. And shooting happens.
He does towards the end, doesn't he?
He has to pull shit at the end, but it's one of those movies where how can this possibly end? And from the beginning, you're like, oh no, how's it going to end? How's it going to end? And he tries a few times, nothing works out. How's it going to work out? And then you've got this like Forrest Whitaker being the cop who's like kind of knows what's going on because kind of sorting it out. Doesn't really, really, really cool. I'm sure most of you have
seen
it.
I'm surprised it's this high, but I understand why it's on the list.
I think it's just pure intensity. This is a pure, there's nothing else in this movie but one set. A couple of actors, voices over.
It's pretty short too, so it maintains that intensity.
Yes, which I really liked. So yeah, there you go. Phone Booth,
okay.
Number three.
Very nice. Speaking of short and to the point, not talking about my penis.
There it is. Good.
I am instead talking about Alfonso Cuarón again. Hmm. Gravity.
Oh, dude. Gravity is the honorable mention for me.
Oh, so close.
When the space station blows up, that was whole shit.
Apart from how fantastically it's shot.
It's beautiful. And it's put together. Beautiful-ass movie.
And how good this film looks. And I think is one of the best 3D films I've ever seen. I know it's a short list of good 3D films, but this one absolutely takes advantage of its of that medium.
Oh yeah.
It's also just so full on, like once the space station gets destroyed and everyone's dying, it's just Clooney and Sandra Bullock, who is the main character, left.
Yeah.
Whew.
I think that
how are they going to survive? The whole time you're like, well, they're fucked.
Because they're in space, man.
Yeah, because there is no more harsh environment, no more foreign environment, even arguably sort of the ocean is better. We got more chance there than we have up in the nether region, so to speak, of space.
In space's asshole. Yes.
And then we're down to the one character that we're down to, if you haven't seen the film, I'm being vague for spoilers. Mm. And holy crap. It has one moment.
Yeah.
One moment of the film where I was like, what? Well, that's shit. But then that's revealed to be what it's revealed to be, and it's all again.
Honestly,
this is a sheer experience.
I didn't think I had a problem with that scene you're talking about, but I remember going, well, is that just to fulfill certain contractual?
Yeah.
I know, but I think it's, I don't know. It is a great, great movie. I heard someone talking about this recently saying that they hated it because like the idea that Sandra Bullock is a reluctant astronaut, it's like, you can't actually be a reluctant astronaut.
Okay, sure.
But there's nothing wrong with it. No, he was just giving a shit. Look, I love Gravity. Definitely, definitely good call. All right. My number two is Seven. That's right. It's Seven number two.
Yeah, I gotcha.
Okay. So because it's been so long since Seven opened and we're so used to hearing and talking about it, it's easy to forget how you actually felt about this movie. Do you remember that, well, of course, everyone knows Seven, but, you know, this killer is going around, Kevin Spacey, and he's taking out people and killing them in
John
a style.
John Doe has the upper hand.
That's right. He's killing them in the style or themed to the seven deadly sins. Now, we all know about what's in the box. I'm not actually talking about that. I'm talking about the whole movie. Because what happens is, as each of them go down, do you remember the scene where there was a fat dude tied up and there's a bucket of vomit under him and shit like that?
Mm.
And then as each sort of really horrendous act goes along, I remember thinking to myself, how is the next one going to go down? And how did, you know, and then when it turned up, it was filthy.
Worse than you thought.
Worse than I thought. Again, David Fincher, man. He's the best director in the world. That's it.
Is it Andrew Davis Walker or something that wrote this film? It's a three-barrel name. Have you got that detail in front of you?
Yeah, you'd think I would, but went like this week.
So close. Andrew Kevin Walker.
Andrew Kevin Walker is the writer.
Same dude from Memory who wrote 8mm.
Oh, really? Man, this guy's dark.
It is indeed the same guy. God. So he clearly has a few screws loose, but we are the recipients or the beneficiaries of said screws.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. I guess for me, the only reason I don't think about this movie is because it was unpleasant. But the how good it really was is how I remember it. So yeah, seven, man. Seven's my number two.
I mean, I'm not disagreeing. I understand that it is an intense film. It just feels a little high for me because there's all.
Do you think it's more?
It's a police procedural, and therefore there is all this, and then lots of talking about what we're gonna do next and whatever. Then there's all this, and then it's like a bit more like a roller coaster.
It was all up the each time, but like I guess because I was just intrigued. So yeah, my bad.
Fair enough. My number two is the most recent film on my list. I think it's about a month out, I think, from memory, after Hereditary. I think you saw it in the end, but we didn't get to see it together.
Mm-hmm.
It's A Quiet Place.
Oh fuck, that's a good call.
This film is all built around suspense.
That's a good call. You're right, it is.
The entire film.
Because it's so quiet.
To the point of people, and I've heard this time and again on podcasts, just talking to people just on the streets about this movie and talking it up. And they're like, oh yeah, oh God, that film when I saw it at the movies, I didn't want to eat my popcorn. I didn't want to make a noise.
Yes.
And for it to have that impact on your viewing experience.
Mm.
And that was absolutely my experience I saw it at advanced screening, which was fantastic. Wasn't that busy. It was, from memory, it was like just before Easter. I think it was Thursday night before Easter.
So it wasn't
well attended. But the guy, of course, in front of me, to my left, his phone went off. It was the night of, actually, it must have been late March because it was the first night of the AFL season. And he had some kind of alert on his phone come up about the game.
Oh my God.
It was like, and fucking... I jumped.
Did you jump?
I jumped and like just glared daggers at him. And he was like, oh, bro. I couldn't tell how ready he was, but he cringed in his seat.
Oh my God. You know what's weird? How does anyone's phone go off anymore? Who hasn't got their phone on silent all the fucking time?
It should
time?
Be the first fucking thing that happens when you move into movie theater.
Who actually keeps their phone on not silent? Like everyone
My
does.
Job means that my phone's always on silent. Very real. I take it off if I'm expecting an important phone call. That's it.
I guess so. But mine never is on. Yeah. Like until the ring's never on. So there you go.
Anyway, everyone's anecdotal stories about watching this film are the same, which is, whether you love the film or you disliked it for whatever reason, everyone agrees it was tense, it was intense, and it was a very different viewing experience.
Absolutely.
So John Krasinski's directorial debut, who has signed on to write and direct number two.
How's he going to do that?
Interesting. I've even heard a rumor that Emily Blunt is back. So,
well, I imagine she would have to be back.
Well, I would have thought we would just take it from a different perspective, some completely other family or group that have survived.
Perhaps you're right. Mm. Wow. Okay.
There we are. My number
good
two.
Job. That was a really good call.
Thank you. Well, let's give us your recap and then straight into your number one.
Word. My number 10 was Cube, and my number 9 was Speed, and my number 8 was Prisoners. I'm just doing one line, like one
yeah,
word titles
are.
Here. Number 7, Sicario.
Yep.
Number 6, The Game.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. Number 5, Running Scared. Number 6.
What? No.
Are you shitting me? This movie was so good, I want to crap my pants. This is a good ass. Running Scared, everyone, is an unexpectedly good ass show. For real. For reals. So, number 4 was Children of Men. Number
3. Wordy.
Oh, dear. Sorry. Number 3, Phone Booth. Number 2, 7. And my number 1, I'm sure it's your number 1, but maybe it's not. Whiplash. Not even close?
Whiplash is on my honorable mentions.
Oh, shit. Okay. Well, everyone, Whiplash is a goddamn movie about drumming. Now, I'm sure you've all seen it, but maybe you haven't. It's about Miles Teller, who goes into this school. It is run by J.K. Simmons, who's the biggest prick you ever met. And he's the basically orchestra master, whatever you've called, right? Maestro. I don't know. But teacher. He's a teacher. But he's so harsh on people that they freak out. You're drumming until you're fucking, literally your fingers are bleeding and so on. And at the end, there's this particularly very intense scene where I actually forgot I was watching a movie, where he comes out, J.K. Simmons basically tries to embarrass him in front of some very important people he's playing on stage. And then he just turns the whole situation around and, you know, takes the leads, shows off his talents. And eventually the teacher, actually J.K. Simmons, comes around and starts kind of helping him in the middle of that scene. And I remember going, I can't believe I'm even remotely interested in a drumming.
Yeah, that's a fair assessment or statement.
But all the way through, you're feeling his pain and you're actually kind of thinking to yourself, is it worth the shit he's going through to get to the place that he gets to?
Yep.
Interesting thing here, Damien Chazelle, the director, has weighed in on what happened after that scene.
Oh, what did he say?
He said that, because someone asked him, where do you think these two will go after this movie ends? They have that moment at the end of the film, but are they always going to hate each other? He says, I think so. I think it's definitely a fleeting thing. I think there's a certain amount of damage that will have always been done. Fletcher, that's J.K. Simmons, will always think he won, and Andrew, Miles Teller, will be a sad, empty shell of a person and will die in his 30s of a drug overdose.
Wow.
That's what he said.
That's dark.
I have a very dark view of where it goes. I'm like, holy shit, that's specific.
All right, well, that's the director's prerogative to have that.
Yeah. Exactly, but I'm like, wow, that guy just went there.
So on my honorable mentions, in my top, well, I've got seven there in my honorable mentions, so in my top 17, so we're not that far off the mark. You won't have my number one on your list, but let's get to that in a moment as I read back through my much wordier list. Number 10, Children of Men. Number 9, The Revenant. Number 8, The Raid. 7, Sicario. 6, Hereditary. 5, the positively hard to say Mad Max Fury Road. Just how many words there are.
Oh, God.
4, Martyrs. 3, Gravity. 2, A Quiet Place. And number 1 is Neil Marshall's British horror masterpiece, The Descent.
Ah, you do like this movie.
This film is phenomenal. It opens with, you know, we get like 1 minute, maybe 90 seconds of happy families and laughing, cavorting. Then there's an accident which kills the child.
Jesus!
And the dad, and leaves this poor woman alone in the world. And her friends, a year later, come together to take her on this spelunking adventure.
Go spelunking, people. Yeah. It's under the ground and it's caves.
And hence the tension. So, all right, once we get into the caves, which is probably 15 minutes into the film, after that, it immediately becomes tense because it's apparent that these people, even though one or two of them are experienced spelunkers, the others aren't as experienced. And we straight away start playing with the conventions of claustrophobia and all this weight that is literally suspended above you. And if it comes down, that is the end of you.
I don't think I can handle this.
There's a great couple of scenes where that is played to full effect. And then the creatures come into play. And Neil Marshall does a very smart thing. He doesn't really show you them clearly until the very end of the film, a la the Jaws effect.
Mm.
They're all women in this film, which is another fantastic little device in 2005, which is well ahead of
absolutely.
The curve on that kind of thing.
You don't see that often.
To have a horror film which is just about women and very few men, almost no men in the entire film.
Mm.
And that adds to some extent, I think, to the intensity of the experience as well, because you don't... Even though a couple of the women are portrayed to be extremely capable, there's this sense normally in a horror film that the guy has to die second to last to leave the final girl she may triumph, but he has to do something critical. We don't get that.
Exactly. There's no component there here.
And in fact, the two most capable climbers, the two main characters, they are at odds.
Oh, really?
Yes. And so, and seriously antagonistically.
Oh.
Which is another element to the intensity of the film.
I don't know if you call this spelunking or not, but I went down to caves and stuff like that.
Yelling up
Margaret River, right? Yep. And I remember going into them and like, there's not enough room to actually kind of twist your body in certain bits. And I'm like, what the fuck am I doing here? So I think if I looked at this film, I'd be like, I don't think I can handle it.
This is a film I would recommend.
Really?
Unlike Martyrs, this is a film you should watch.
All right.
Especially since we have a top 10 British films coming up.
In a couple of weeks.
So
I understand that there is the British version you have to see of this film.
Correct. There's two ends of the film. One is the sanitized American version and one is the real way it was meant to end British version. The reason we have a Descent 2 is because they went with a sanitized American version, which is not a patch on this film.
Okay, fair enough. All right, that may happen. That may happen.
There it is, our most intense films of all time. We want to hear how you thought about our list, but after we hear what you actually did think of your top three in the top 10. But before we get there, quick mentions. Let's just run through them fast, Wayne.
Mm-hmm.
Honorable mentions that haven't been spoken about today.
Totally. Nightcrawler. Black Hawk Down.
Not cool. Yeah, okay.
The other two, I thought City of God was very intense.
Yeah, okay.
It's not quite an intense movie. Yep. Gone Girl, I wrote and read a lot about, and I just went, nah, it's not as intense as the other one. I didn't want to say Saving Private Ryan.
I actually didn't even put them on all mentions because it has some incredibly intense moments. I film so much so, as I famously have recounted, the guy yelling in the cinema, but there are lots of other scenes in the film.
It's not the intense film, it's intense bits in the film. And I just said Run, Roller, Run. Remember Run, Roller, Run?
Yep.
Run, Roller, Run.
That was good.
Yeah.
Yeah, good one. The Thing was the obvious one, which could have been on my list. That's pretty intense the whole way through, but I talk about it all the time.
I know, so but I do that with the list
I just took it out of the equation. It should be on this list, but I just couldn't do it again. We mentioned Angel Mumbai. The Matrix, I think, is a really intense film.
Really?
Yeah, because like the first part is what's going on.
He's
being
right.
led around.
Yeah, good point.
Then he's taken into this other world, literally, and it's like, what the fuck's happening here? And then he's being pursued by the agents. He's having to fight back, and so that's pretty intense.
Yeah, cool.
Training Day. No, you don't like to acknowledge Antoine Fuqua.
No, this is his one thing that he did.
You mentioned Whiplash, and also I had Wreck. And I was going to make a gag at number one, which I forgot. And I was going to say, and my number one is, of course, The Mist. And that's for you, David Powell, who reckons
that's your number one
every second week. Which is also intense, but not good enough to make my top 17.
Yes, fair enough. Oh, that's big.
All right, that's nice our fun. List then. Let's hear about your list in our segment that we call The Pop 10.
Talk about. Talk about
Pop 10. Right, kicking off this week's Pop 10 then with the aforementioned Billy from We Watched a Thing, who had number 3. Actually, I'll read it the other way. Number 1, Sicario.
Yeah.
Number 2, Misery.
Ooh.
Number 3, Howl the Duck. That sexual tension was crazy.
Fair enough. Oh, good.
Ryan L. Terry had Hereditary, Misery again, and Requiem for a Dream.
I never saw that.
Ooh,
yeah.
Maybe.
Heard it was harsh.
Maybe you should.
Okay.
J Movie Talk Podcast, Mad Max Fury Road, The Horde, which is a French zombie film.
Oh, really?
Which is pretty good.
Okay.
Pretty good. And again, Misery.
What the hell?
I feel like we've missed the boat here, according to the listeners. Sudden Double Deep Podcast had Wreck, Green Room, not the last time that one we mentioned, and The Raid.
Good.
FYFC Studios, Green Room again. High Tension, another French film. I'm getting a sense here of French intense, yeah.
What is Green Room?
Green Room is the film with Anton Yelchin.
Yeah.
His second last film before he passed away. It's basically about a band, punk band, that playing gigs, and they do this sort of out-of-the-way gig somewhere and witness something they shouldn't witness in a neo-Nazi kind of bar.
Oh.
And Patrick Stewart is sort of the guy running it, and he's like, well, we have to kill him.
Whoa.
So they're trapped in the green room at the back, barricaded themselves in whilst all these neo-Nazis are trying to get in to kill them.
Damn. Okay, that's interesting.
Well worth a look. I liked it. I didn't love it. I had been oversold on it, I think.
Okay.
So my expectations were really high.
Mm.
And FYFC finished off with The Strangers with Scott Speedman and Liv Tyler. You know, the film where they're just whatever they are in a hotel somewhere or a house somewhere and... Then maybe it's their home they come back to. Can't remember. Anyway, this group of people just break into the house.
Really?
And they're all wearing masks and they proceed to do terrible things to them.
Oh, really?
And when they say, well, why us? What do we ever do to you? You were home. Or you answered the door or something like that.
Okay, no. I'd prefer The Stranger, which is the movie where you lay on your hand and then beat off.
The movie or the move, did you say?
I said a movie, but it's a movie. Okay.
Nick Polodichuk, Heat, Mad Max Fury Road, and The Dark Knight.
Heat. Good one. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Sam Hurley from the Movie Views and 20Qs podcast out of New Zealand, Green Room, Children of Men, and number one, Avengers Infinity War. Just because I was so personally and emotionally invested in these characters, and after Heimdall and Loki went down so soon, I knew no one was safe.
I love that. I love the Marvel movies, and I'm shitting my pants for Endgame. I'm just hoping they don't fuck it up.
Yeah, of course. Dear Daniel Movie Podcast, Children of Men, The Thing, and Night of the Hunter.
Night of the Hunter. Yep.
Dan Folks had The Ray, Children of Men, and Dunkirk.
What?
I knew you would be happy with that one.
Dunkirk. Yeah, but like, can things really be intense if they're 18 hours long? I don't know.
Oh. That shit is cold. JB had Sicario, A Quiet Place, and Room. And said that
Brie
scene...
Larson.
Yeah, where Jacob Tremblay is trying to escape will forever be the most anxiety-inducing scene of all time for me.
You've seen this?
Yeah.
Is it?
You haven't seen it?
No, I'm scared. I was told that it was like really hard to watch.
Sometimes
you got to not be a bitch.
Yeah,
I understand.
Yes. Then live it. all right, three different ones here from Spoonlamp, who actually gave us about 10, but I'll read the first three. Way of the Gun.
Oh, really? Okay.
Aliens? Yeah, I can see that. Sure. And Gravity. From Comp My Pod podcast, Sarah from that show, Killing Them Softly. Now, do you know that one?
Brad Pitt show? I think it's a Brad Pitt show with Ben Mendelsohn.
Mendo. All right. Alpha, which was a relatively recent film, and Heat again.
Good one.
Gerald from Two Peas on a Podcast, who welcomed his new child into the world the last couple of weeks.
Congratulations, son.
Gerald. Seven, Hereditary and Audition, the Takashi Miike film from 1999.
You seen it?
Yep.
Good.
Pretty intense.
Wow.
Dumb Guzzler Podcast, The Negotiator, Behind Enemy Lines.
What is that? Negotiator, is that the Kevin Spacey?
Yeah, Kevin Spacey, Samuel Jackson one.
Yep.
Behind Enemy Lines.
I love Behind Enemy Lines.
And Baywatch. Fuck you, dude. Fuck. You. All right, last couple from our Facebook listener community. David Powell, the aforementioned, had number three, Mad Max Fury Road. Number two, The Raid. Woo! And number one, Daniel Henderson from the IMDb Dune podcast. Mentioned him earlier too. Also mentioned this one, Wages of Fear. I challenge anyone to so much as whisper during Clouseau's masterpiece about four men transporting trucks filled with nitroglycerin over mountain roads. Every pothole makes you hold your breath. Well-deserved Golden Bear and Palme d'Or winners from 1953.
What's it called again?
The Wages of Fear.
Wow.
I have got that film now. Looking forward to
really?
Watching it.
Really? Nice one.
Thank you for the recommendation, guys. Stephen Croon had Children of Men, Deliverance, and The Thing.
Mm-hmm. Good one.
Geordie Davis had Bringing Out the Dead, The Game. There you go. And Training Day.
Nice.
And lastly, James Spence had Reservoir Dogs, The Thing, and Wind River.
Yeah, Wind River, if it was more tense for more of it, I would have gone there.
I would say the last half of that film. Yeah.
But even the whole... Yeah, I know what you mean. Yep. Yeah, okay. Yeah,
great choices. Thank you so much to everyone. Sorry I couldn't get through them all. Once again, we had a lot of feedback. Really do appreciate it. And how do people give us feedback about the topics each week on the show?
Just Google the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews podcast or search for that same name on Facebook or send us an email at thecountdownpodcast@gmail.com.
You can hit us up on Twitter at @thecountdownpc. You can also get it to us on the Facebook listening community if you're a member and the link is in the show notes. Hit us up. We had a couple of reviews this week. Thanks so much to people who took the time. Here's reviews on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you happen to listen to us. All those reviews really do help the show. It's greatly appreciated. And if you're not a member, we have a Patreon page. Head on over to the link in the show notes and join up for a whole bunch of extra content, which has actually grown to be quite substantial.
There's a lot of crap there now. I mean, good crap.
Good way to sell it.
There's a lot of good crap there. There are some stories about us you don't want to know about.
That is absolutely true. In fact, Wayne is clearly the best marketer. Holy shit, dude.
Well done.
And you haven't guessed, Wayne's real job in real life is as a marketer.
Sadly, not the best around, though.
All right, Wayne, what are we doing next week for episode 208?
Top 10 British films.
Excellent. Coincides nicely with the fact that I just got notification through that the Master Debaters have released their episode, which we feature in.
Oh, nice.
So if you're at all interested, head on over to the Master Debaters and check out their most recent ep. I think maybe their first for 2019.
We sing too much in that episode.
I sing too much. No one thinks you sing too much.
That's great.
It was a lot of fun. Great fun. Thanks to the guys for having us on. So top 10 British films, which should be very interesting. We're going to do some geographical ones through the course of the year, kicking it off with British films.
Yes.
And then the week after, with thanks to patron at the top level, Sally Vaughan, we're going to be doing the top 10 ambiguous endings in films. So it'll be spoiler, obviously, filled, but should be a lot of fun in that episode as well. All right. That is it for this week's episode of the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews podcast. My name is Paul.
My name is Wayne.
And this has been The Soundboard.
Where is your honor, dirtbag? You are an absolute disgrace.
Suck my dick. Fucking shit.
Accurate. Well, we will catch you next week. My name is Paul.
My name is Wayne.
And this has been The Soundboard. I stand resolute, motherfucker.
You, okay, okay. This this is not. You can't put the sound drop of you because it just sounds like you're saying it, and people are going, "That was the worst delivered line ever." You, or at least talk over it while you do it. Damn it, bitch! Listen and learn, bitch. I'm sorry, everyone.